The Catcher Podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today we are really getting into the history of mathematics. We're looking at Jacqueline Steddel's fantastic book, The History of Mathematics, a very short introduction.
Yeah, and if you like maybe think of math as just this fixed kind of scary set of rules, well, get ready for a rethink. Our goal today really is to see mathematics as this dynamic cultural thing, sometimes messy, definitely human.
Exactly. It's not just about answers. It's a story full of arguments, you know, big breakthroughs.
Totally.
And why this history matters, at least to me, it changes how you see even a complex formula. You suddenly remember, oh, a person struggled with this. Plus, it's like an amazing toolkit for critical thinking.
How so?
Well, it makes you question those simple stories we always hear, you know, about inevitable progress, whether it's in tech or business or whatever. You start asking, wait, is that the whole story? That's a great point. And guiding us through this is Jacqueline Steddel. She sadly passed away in 2014, but her work has left a huge mark. She was a really respected historian of mathematics at Oxford.
Right. And what gave her such authority was this unique mix of skills. She wasn't just good at math. She knew math inside out.
But she combined that with meticulous historiography.
Historiography, it sounds a bit academic.
It just means she was really focused on how history gets written, the principles behind it. She wasn't just looking at the math formulas. She was digging into how we constructed the story of math history itself.
Ah, okay. Checking the methods, not just the facts.
Exactly. Making sure it wasn't just a, you know, convenient story we tell ourselves now.
So she went straight to the source materials, like the original stuff.
Yep. Original texts, letters, manuscripts. Mm-hmm. Often in different languages. Mm. And because she did that groundwork, she could spot the biases in the older histories.
Which positioned her perfectly to tackle that big myth.
The lone genius myth. Yeah, that idea of one person inventing something out of thin air. Steddel really shows that's not how it works.
Okay, so let's unpack her main argument then. What's the core idea?
Well, Steddel argues pretty forcefully that mathematics is not this straight line of progress, heading inevitably to where we are now, and definitely not discovered only by Europeans.
Right.
She's pushing back hard against what historians call Whig history.
Whig history. Let's break that down. It's basically looking back and thinking everything in the past was just like a clumsy attempt to get to us, right?
Precisely. That kind of smug view.
Yeah.
It ignores how people thought back then on their own terms.
So Steddel throws that out.
He does. She replaces that simple teleological view, the idea math was destined to be what it is today, with a much richer picture. It's contextual, it's global.
So her big question isn't just what math happened.
No, it's more like, how should we actually write and think about the history of mathematics? She embraces the cultural exchanges, the dead ends, the whole messy process.
Okay, and the book takes us on sort of two tracks you mentioned.
Yeah, on one level you follow the big ideas, algebra, calculus, how they developed. But she also looks at how mathematical practice itself changed.
What do you mean by practice?
Things like what counted as a solid proof? How did notation evolve? You know, moving from writing everything out in words to using symbols. And how did math become like a profession?
I see. So it's the concepts in the community. It really shows the human drama behind it all.
That's it. The intellectual drama.
Yeah.
So how did she suggest we start seeing that drama, especially way back in history?
Well, it starts with looking at the actual evidence, but on its own terms. Chapter one is all about this historical empathy she talks about.
Okay.
Like, take the ancient Greeks. What they meant by number, usually a positive whole number, is totally different from our concept today, which includes irrational numbers, negative number, complex numbers.
Right. So if we just map our ideas onto them,
we completely miss what they were actually doing and achieving. We distort it.
Okay, that makes sense. And being careful like that lets her paint a much more global picture.
Yeah.
Moving beyond just Greece to Europe.
Absolutely. You see this amazing worldwide tapestry like Babylonia around 1800 BCE. They had this complex base 60 system.
Which is why we still have 60 seconds in a minute, 360 degrees in a circle.
Exactly. And they had these step-by-step methods, algorithms, written on clay tablets for solving problems that, well, we would call quadratic equations now.
Incredible. But then India comes into the picture with some really huge contributions.
Oh, monumental. Steddel is super clear. India gave us three things that basically built the modern world. The place value decimal system we use every day.
Yep.
The foundations of trigonometry. And crucially, the idea of zero as an actual number.
And that leap with zero, It's hard to even grasp how big a deal that was. Zero is just a placeholder, like in 101 is one thing.
Right.
But zero is a number you can add, subtract, multiply with. That changed everything. You can't really do complex arithmetic or algebra without it.
Yeah, it's fundamental. And following that spark from India, you see this incredible flourishing in the Islamic world.
Right. Stedel shows that during their golden age, maybe 800 to 1400 CE, scholars, there weren't just like librarians keeping old texts safe. They were innovators.
They built on the Greek and Indian ideas.
Massively. I mean, the word algebra itself, it comes straight from the title of Al-Khwarizmi's book. That period was a powerhouse of synthesis and totally original thinking. It reshaped math.
Okay, so the story then picks up in Europe around the 16th century, scientific revolution time.
Yeah, and Stedel points to a really key moment. Italian mathematicians like Cardano and Tartaglia figuring out how to solve cubic and quartic equations. Equations harder than the standard ones.
Why was that so important?
Psychologically, it was huge. It was the first time European mathematicians clearly surpassed the ancient Greeks. They proved they could go further.
Ah, breaking that barrier.
And that breakthrough helped drive a revolution in how math was written, moving away from rhetorical algebra.
Which is basically writing math problems out in long sentences.
Exactly. Moving from that to the symbolic notation we recognize today, pioneered by people like Viète and Descartes, X's and Y's and plus signs.
And that wasn't just about saving space.
Not at all. It was a conceptual tool. It let mathematicians think about and manipulate ideas that were just too complex, too abstract, to handle purely in words.
Okay, and this all builds towards calculus in the 17th century.
Right, and Stedel uses the famous Newton-Leibniz fight as a kind of case study.
Who invented it first?
Well, her point is, it wasn't really one person in isolation. It was more like a simultaneous discovery. Why? Because there was this urgent need across science. How do you describe motion, change, rates of change?
So the problem itself was pushing people towards the solution.
Exactly. It shows math as this collaborative response to shared questions, shared pressures, less lone genius, more community effort.
So after Newton and Leibniz, we get the 18th century, the age of Euler.
Yeah, the age of application.
Mm-hmm.
Calculus just exploded. People like Euler used it to solve tons of problems, but they were often running a bit fast and loose with the logic. These concepts like infinitesimals, these vaguely defined, infinitely small quantities with amazing intuition, brilliant results, but the actual logical foundations were, well, shaky.
Okay, so they were getting the right answers, but couldn't quite rigorously prove why they were right yet?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which created the need for the next phase.
Yeah.
The 19th century age of rigor.
Yeah.
You get mathematicians like Cauchy and Weierstrass coming in to clean things up.
Right. This is where calculus gets its modern, really strict definitions.
This is where the scary-sounding epsilon delta definitions come from. Yeah, they sound intimidating. But all they really did was replace vague ideas like getting really, really close to zero with a mathematically precise, logically perfect way to define limits.
So turning intuition into solid proof.
Exactly. Rock-solid logic. But the 19th century wasn't just about tidying up. It started to shake the very foundations of math. Well, first you get non-Euclidean geometries. For 2,000 years, everyone assumed Euclid's geometry was the only geometry. Then mathematicians showed, nope, other consistent geometries are possible.
Mind-blowing.
Totally. And then came Georg Cantor. His work on set theory and infinity was revolutionary.
What was so radical about infinity? People knew about infinity, right?
Kind of, but mostly as a vague philosophical concept. Cantor showed, mathematically, that there are different sizes of infinity. Some infinities are literally bigger than others.
Wait, what? How?
It's deep stuff. But it completely shattered existing ideas about numbers and sparked huge philosophical debates. What is a number? What does infinity mean?
Wow. Okay. And then the 20th century brought perhaps the biggest shock.
Yeah. The dream of putting all of mathematics onto one perfectly consistent logical foundation. Kurt Gödel blew that up in the 1930s with his incompleteness theorems.
Okay, I've heard of those, but what do they actually mean? Even math isn't perfectly certain.
That's the staggering implication, Stedel explains. In any sufficiently powerful formal system, like arithmetic, there will always be statements that are true that cannot be proven using the rules of that system.
So there are limits to logic itself.
Yes. Built-in limits to what we can prove, even in math. The supposed bedrock of certainty. Yeah. It's profound.
Okay, wow. So after that whole journey, What are the big takeaways Stettel wants us to get? What are the core lessons?
I think there are three really powerful ones. The first is what you could call the humanization of mathematics.
Right. The idea that math isn't just floating out there. It's made by people.
Exactly. People trying to solve specific problems, measuring land in Egypt, figuring out planetary orbits, whatever it was. It's not discovered in a vacuum. It grows out of communities, letters, journals, arguments. A social thing.
But hang on, if it's just made by humans for human problems, does that take away from the idea that math is, like, universally true, the Platonic ideal?
That's a great question. I think Stettel would say the universal patterns math describes might be out there, but our understanding, our way of capturing them, is filtered through human culture, language, needs.
Ah, okay. The tools change, the standard of proof changes, even if the underlying patterns are constant.
Precisely. The need to understand patterns seems universal, but how we do it evolves.
Okay. What's the second theme?
The global tapestry. This is huge. We just have to get past the biased old story. Recognize the absolutely foundational work from India Zero, Place Value, and the Islamic World Algebra.
It's not just a footnote. It's central.
It is central. And it shows the power of ideas flowing between cultures.
And the third theme?
The evolution of rigor and practice. This is about realizing that what mathematicians accept as a solid proof, or even what they mean by a number, isn't fixed forever. It changes.
So progress isn't just finding new theorems.
No. Sometimes progress means fundamentally questioning your methods, your definitions, redefining the rules of the game itself. That happens again and again.
Stettel's writing must have some really powerful lines that capture these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. Her phrasing is very careful, very deliberate. There are core statements that really stick with you.
Give us an example.
Okay, here's one that sums up her whole approach. The history of mathematics should not be a story of inevitable progress towards our current knowledge, but an exploration of the varied and culturally specific ways of mathematical thinking that have existed throughout the past.
That really emphasizes the historical empathy you mentioned. Don't judge the past by today's standards.
Exactly. Stop thinking they were just failing to be us. And here's another one directly hitting that myth we talked about.
The lone genius.
Yep. She writes, "Mathematics is not the work of isolated geniuses. It is a collaborative and messy human endeavor, driven by curiosity, practical needs, and argument."
Collaborative and messy. I like that. It feels more real.
Doesn't it? And one more, driving home the global point. The story of mathematics is a global story. The familiar narrative that runs from Greece to Renaissance Europe is an incomplete and misleading one, ignoring the crucial and foundational contributions from India, China, and the Islamic world.
That's a direct call for rewriting the textbooks, basically.
It really is. An accurate and inclusive history.
Okay, so we've got this richer, messier, more human, more global view of math history. How do we actually use this thinking? What are the real life applications?
Well, for me, the biggest one is about developing critical thinking generally.
How so?
Take Stettel's critique of that Whig history, that simple straight line story of progress. Apply that everywhere.
So when you hear about some new tech breakthrough or a company's success story,
ask, is this the whole picture? Whose perspective is missing? What failures or alternative paths got edited out to make it look so smooth and inevitable? It's a powerful lens.
That's really useful. What else?
Well, think about fostering innovation. Where did the really big leaps in math come from?
Not just solving harder problems.
Right. They came from challenging the fundamental assumptions. Non-Euclidean geometry questioned Euclid. Symbolic notation changed the language itself. Cantor questioned the nature of infinity.
So the lesson for innovation is, don't just play the game better, question the rules of the game.
Exactly. That's where real creativity often lies, in any field, questioning the foundational rules.
Okay, and maybe one more application?
I think there's a very personal one. Demystifying complex skills, like math itself, or anything that seems daunting.
How does the history help there?
When you see the human struggle behind the formulas, the debates, the slow dawning of ideas over centuries, the cultural context, it stops being this cold, abstract thing.
It becomes a human story you can connect with.
Yeah. It makes it less intimidating, more meaningful. You realize even geniuses struggled, argued, and built on what came before. It makes learning feel more achievable.
That's a great point. So wrapping up, what was the thing that surprised you most, maybe, digging back into Stettel's perspective?
You know, it wasn't just that math could have errors or crises. It was the idea that the foundations themselves could be shown to be, well, not incomplete exactly, but limited, Gödel's theorems.
Right, the limits of logic.
Yeah. That even in math, you can't achieve absolute certainty from within the system.
Yeah.
It tells you math isn't just about finding final answers. It's this ongoing process of refining the questions, the language, the rules we use. That was quite profound, actually.
For me, the biggest takeaway is just how powerful that cross-cultural exchange was. It wasn't a relay race passing the baton from Greece to Europe.
Uh-huh.
It was this dynamic mixing pot. Babylonia, India, the Islamic world, Europe, ideas flowing back and forth. That's where the explosive creativity happened. It's a huge lesson about collaboration and, frankly, just getting the history right, being inclusive.
Well said. It really is a global human story.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker,
another
powerful book, another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.